Hi, welcome to Folkcraft. I'm Temperance.
And I'm Aaron.
And today we're going to be talking about reversal magic. Reversal magic can go a lot of ways, but I want to really specifically talk about it because it touches I think it's an effective skill that everyone needs to know, but it touches into a lot of fields of magic because everyone does it a little bit differently. And there's a lot of misconceptions about reversal magic. One of the main misconceptions I think that I have seen been mistaken for it on the internet is that reversal magic is a counter hex, but a hex in itself. And we'll get into it in the episode, but just like flat off on the base, a reversal won't affect someone if nothing has been sent in the first place. Like if you're doing a reversal properly and effectively, just, you know, okay, well, I think this person has sent me something, so I'm going to send it back. If they didn't send you something to begin with, nothing is going to get sent back. And so that's one hard line kind of key feature, is that you're not hexing someone, you're not cursing someone, you're just holding up a reflection. And if something happens to bounce off that, then it does. But if there's nothing to bounce off that, nothing's going to happen.
You know, that's something I've never really thought about because I'm in such a internet bubble, the idea of reversal as a curse in and of itself. But it is exactly like you say. You know, I tie my magic back to you. I don't use the word reversal very often. And actually, when we were starting this topic, I was like, oh, I'm not going to have much to say because I don't do reversals, but I do a ton of counter magic. And it is just like you say, it's you're taking, so in folk magic, oftentimes you're taking parts of the cursed person or object and you're burning it with a couple other things. If no one's done anything to you, you're just burning some hair. It's just going to smell like someone's straight iron is really hot that day. You know what I mean? If someone is fucking with you, that is going to start reflecting on them once you start that magic. So it is interesting to hear that there's kind of this conception of it, like, instead of doing a return to sender spell or whatever, they're actually like, I'm just going to curse you back, you bitch, which I'm fine with. I mean, hey, you do you. But
I mean, I think it's a fun way to do it. Like, I have definitely sent a reversal with some extra on top. I have done that a number of times. I like doing that. But
just a little sprinkle. Just a little
have fun with that. But, you know, I think that when you're talking about the identification of has malefic magic been done to you, it's a risky, dangerous territory, because in one way, could something have been done magically to you, or could someone have sent you bad will or bad intentions? Yes, that could have happened, but more than likely it didn't happen. And so we're dealing with, is this person undergoing some kind of stress or trauma? Do they believe this? Do they need to believe that they've been cursed so that they can feel? But like, what are the circumstances under which I feel like they have been cursed? Have they identified who the, you know, supposed attacker is? And, you know, is this person a real life person? Is this person someone they met on the internet? If you're very public on the internet, odds are maybe someone did actually, you know, try and send something at you. People get offended on the internet for no reason. But if it's in real life and you're like, okay, well, I think my neighbor Mary tried to curse me, what would lead you to believe that? Okay, like, are your plants dying? Did you get into a car accident? What is the recurring thing that's happened, right? Because, like, let's say you got into a car accident, you're like, oh no, someone cursed me. How can you prove that based on one car accident? And so, you know, there's techniques, people use divination to see if they've been hexed or cursed, or they'll go off like an intuitive feeling, or they'll do astral travel. But I'm curious for you, Aaron, how do you initially diagnose that you might need reversal magic?
So I want to start with all the stuff that you just said, because I'm a skeptic at heart. I know I sit on here and I talk about ghosts and skunk ape and shit like that, but truly and honestly, I would consider myself a skeptic at heart. So if I get into a car accident, my thought process is not going to be, oh, this is brujería work. My thought process is going to be, oh shit, I probably should have used a turn signal. Actually, I always use a turn signal because I'm a very safe driver. Or like, oh wow, that person in the Froyo parking lot was not looking when they hit reverse. Martha. Not a real thing that actually happened to me a couple of years ago. It was in a Froyo parking lot, as a matter of fact. But my first thought process is not to consider witchcraft. Even if I did just get into a fight with someone or an argument, and if it does start to become a pattern, or if there is something that, you know, the buzzword, my intuition, starts to tell me, like, something's funky, I would not go to curse. I would go to evil eye. So I would, if I'm going to consider magical maleficium in any kind of way or baneful work, I'm going to probably assume that it is evil eye, that it is someone who is thinking or looking at me maliciously and kind of instinctively creating hex-like effects without necessarily purposely doing it. And again, there's kind of a twofold thing here. It's a little different for us because we are public witches, but most of the time people are not drawing the ire of a witch. There's not that many of us, honestly. And most of the bad things that happen are just kind of bad luck. So if I'm going to consider that something is happening, I'm probably going to go evil eye first. And I would do some light cleansings. So there's actually kind of a little bit of a process before I actually get to the nitty gritty of my... I have a personalized divination system that I specifically use when things are just kind of like, oh, things seem to be going pretty bad right now. What's going on? But within that system, I only use it if I've already used another form of divination to confirm that outside forces are involved. So I do think divination is key. And I do a kind of a two-part process. One, a divination system that is built in to tell me if an outside, not just witchcraft, not just cursing, but outside entity is causing something bad to happen, right? Because it could also be spiritual. You could have something kind of hanging around the house. Maybe your ancestors are trying to tell you something and you're misinterpreting that as Carol having sent a curse, or, you know, Bob has laid some tracks for you. Once my first wave of divination has said, like, yeah, there's something going on here, then I have the more specific one. And the more specific one, I toss once. I'm not going to necessarily detail exactly what it is because that kind of defeats the purpose, right? And this is something that's interesting about cursing reversals and divination for these things is you don't really want to put out into the world every little detail about how you do these things. Because then the people that are possibly going to send nasty stuff your way know what your protections are, know what your cursing strategies are, and can just kind of undo it. So a little bit of subterfuge is kind of important, in my opinion. But after the second system, it gets thrown once, I take those meanings, and I'm not going to sit here and be like, but I really do think that it was John in accounting, so I'm going to keep throwing these until they tell me that it was a curse. You know, none of that happens. You throw it once, you write down the results, you put it away. Done. And then whatever the outcome of that is, you start working on what needs to be worked on. If it's spirits, you deal with spirits. If it's another practitioner, then things get a little bit more complicated because then you do, like you said earlier, you have to determine who it comes from if you're going to be as effective as possible. If you can't determine who it is, it could just be a stranger on the internet. It could be, you know, XX Dark Vitch 92666 XXX. Okay. You don't have their name. And you probably aren't going to find them on your followers list. Even if you have just a, like, if you have 100 followers, that's a lot of fucking people to go through, mm-hmm. right? So then you're going to want to be more general. But if you can be specific, you want to be specific because you want to, metaphorically, if you're going to do a return to sender, then the post office has to have the right address to send it back to.
Yeah. I think, you know, what I like is that you said you have two systems of divination. And I want to make it super clear that if you are coming into your initial reading looking for confirmation bias, you will find it regardless, okay? If you come into this and you're like, I've been cursed, I know I'm cursed, but I guess I have to do the divination anyways, you will find a way to make that reading sway into your favor. So it's really good to come into it from either an unbiased perspective, or if you know you cannot be unbiased about it, go to someone that you know could be unbiased about it and get a general reading if you have to. There's nothing that says that you cannot, you know, make sure you know who you're getting a reading from. Make sure you trust them, because there's tons of readers out there who are going to say, oh, I see a curse on your like bloodline and it's going to take $500 to get it removed. So, you know, we want to make sure we're going towards people that we know, that we trust, that can help us through the situation. You know, but for me personally, if I'm identifying it initially, and I will give the secrets, Aaron, so you don't have to. But I have kind of a two-part system too. The first part has to do with me doing something else that I'm not going to explain, but the second part is a bone reading. And I just, you know, look at where they fall and I look at how spirit wants to communicate through those and identify, you know, who are the players? What are the pieces? Am I missing something? And then I take a picture of it and I sit on it and I review it the next day when it's cold to me to see, one, if I missed anything, or two, if I was biased in my initial reading of the throw. And then from that point on, I kind of begin to identify, okay, well, who could it be or what could it be? And like you said, you don't always know who it is. So there are a few ways that you can kind of handle reversals. One is to give a targeted reversal. And again, if you give a targeted reversal to someone, let's say that you've done a divination reading and you're like, yeah, you know what, Aaron sent me the curse of minor inconveniences. I hit every red light on the way to work yesterday. I know that's what's happening. I'm sending it back. Okay. And so I do whatever I'm going to do to send it back to Aaron. If Aaron didn't send that to me, then nothing's going to happen to them. But if Aaron sent it to me, they might experience delays the next time they travel. And that's the difference, is I'm not taking harmful action against Aaron. I'm just simply saying, you know what, thanks, but no thanks. Here it is back. If they did not send you anything, they might just feel like, I just feel a little off today, or like I feel, you know, whatever, but nothing is going to happen to them. Nothing negative, nothing bad. You know, there's no rule of three that's going to say, oh, I'm returning this back to you and you're going to get it three times as worse. None of that's going to happen. So that's like a big first key part is, you know, identifying, do I need this and in what way? And a big part of reversal magic, and I'm going to be 100% honest, and maybe we can have another episode about this in the future. A big part of reversal magic is not needing it to begin with, making sure that your house is warded, making sure that you keep up with daily protection, making sure that you have the things in place to protect yourself. Now, are those, could you put a house alarm on your house and still get burglarized? Yes, you could. But the chances go significantly down when you do take care of your surrounding properties, when you do take care of your spiritual self, when you do put those protections in place. It's an important part of the reversal process as well. You're not going to reverse something and then not put them up.
Right. And also taking into account that having your house protected is excellent, because your house is also going to be a major target of magic. But you're not always in your house. Right. And sometimes, depending on the kind of witch, they could be kind of aware of the level of protection that you have. And this is why you do have to be a little careful about who you talk to. And I don't want people to be paranoid. I'm speaking from direct experience when I say, like, not holding my cards to my chest has actually magically bit me in the ass before. From folks that I enjoyed, that I thought were pretty pretty decent people. But in discussions about magic and processes, me revealing things that I did became a way for them to be like, oh, cool, then I know exactly what to do. I'm going to have a spirit that waits outside your door then. And when you open that door, have fucking fun, because they're going to follow you. Because it's not just your, here's my Norwegian farting in church curse, which is a real thing. Look it up. It's my favorite. And I'm going to cast it and it's going to go to you. Someone can send spirits after you. Someone can try to hag ride you. There's a lot of different forms of maleficium and a lot of different ways to counter that. And just like you said, you don't want to go in with bias. You don't want to go in with this, I know that this is what happened. You don't want to be paranoid, but you want to have those healthy boundaries. And that's really what it comes down to. It's having healthy and strong boundaries.
So there's a few ways that reversals are done. There are a number of books that are written on reversals, but like, let's assume for the purposes of this podcast that something has been magically done to you. There are a number of ways and a lot of methods that you could employ to send a reversal back. You know, first off, there are the double and triple action reversal candles. These are usually either red and black candles or red, black, and green. Sometimes white is involved, but usually they're either red or black or red, black, green. So the colors can each signify either different parts of the spell or can, you know, go towards the whole reversal in general. You could use the upside down candle method.
With these candles, I just want to clarify, you're talking about novenas, right?
Yes.
Okay, because I'm the only reason I clarify is because not everyone is going to be as familiar with the novenas or the 7 days. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yes, the double and triple action reversals, those are glass jar novenas. Although the red black reversal can be sold in a pillar outside of a jar, so you can definitely pick those up as well. People also just use like regular black candles for reversals. I've seen white candles, but those are some of the more common ones. They're the easiest if you're doing a reversal. Those are just genuinely the easiest because you just get a jar and it's like already all kind of there. You just have to fix the candle yourself. But that's one part that's already done. Another method that people do is it's like an upside down candle. So you are burning the candle in reverse and, you know, it goes in reverse. Now, I'm not super in the know of that technique. I've tried it once at this point now, and more recently, actually, but Marshall, Witch of Southern Light, had brought it up and I had heard about it, never tried it. Then after he mentioned it to me recently, I researched it myself. But there is like a history of that. And if you want to read more about the technique, I'm sure it's in a number of books, but I know for a fact that it is in the book Reversal and Protection Magic by Jason Miller. I believe that's the title of the book. Another thing that people use in reversal magic is rue. And devil's shoestring, but rue, I think, is super special to be used in protection magic because of its other properties. So rue can be used against witchcraft, just like in general, it is used against witchcraft. It's also kind of caustic, and I don't know if that's the right word, but when you cut rue, like fresh rue, it can cause literal burns on any skin that was exposed to it. So it packs a lot of punch. It's been historically used against witchcraft for hundreds of years. And so personally for me, if I'm doing reversal magic, I always either have, I grow rue. So I either pick fresh rue and put it with the candles, or I burn rue candles alongside what I'm doing. People also use devil's shoestring for reversal magic. I personally don't like using devil's shoestring for reversal magic. I find devil's shoestring works better in domination magic, but that's a personal preference and that's personal gnosis on the use of that plant and its correspondences.
Yeah, whenever I hear devil's shoestring, I think more of tripping up spirits. I think more of kind of manipulating and dealing with those spirits. I did want to throw out some, I guess, low tech or less involved versions of reversal magic. As always, this comes to us from folk accounts. And really, there's not even just a single source. You can find this in almost anything. I briefly mentioned it earlier, but burning something from the afflicted target. So in a lot of folk magic, we've talked about this before, there's a lot of folk magic that primarily involves livestock. But one of the things that we learned, so if a cow has been cursed, for instance, someone might take clippings from the tail hairs and burn those to send the burns to the person who cursed the cow. The basic idea here is you have this idea of contagion. We've talked about that in the past, where now that that cow has been cursed, if someone causes harm to a piece of it outside of what the witch is doing and what is naturally occurring, then that is going to affect the witch. So that's kind of the basic idea. If I take the clippings of this, it's you basically handed me a strand of your own hair, and now I'm going to use this to connect right back to you. So burning, if you feel like you've been cursed, you can burn your own hair. And this isn't quite the same as a reversal, right? Because you're not sending it back to them, but what you're doing is you're causing them effects similar to the curse. Mm-hmm. It's and I haven't really thought of it in these terms because I haven't had this conversation before. So now I kind of have new ideas bubbling up in the brain, which is always a bad thing. And the idea is that you're causing discomfort to the curse and you're causing discomfort to the witch until they undo the magic. And I think that you can work that into other variations. And there are a lot of variations. If someone's cursing your butter, it's always the butter, then you scoop up some of the foam and you start to burn it and you'll burn the witch. And there are other ways of doing it. Even in the stories where they talk about it, they might throw a silver coin underneath to protect from it first, you know? You try to be nice and then you throw it on the fire.
They have too many vegans now. How can I do an effective dairy curse if Robin Valentine is a vegan and only has almond milk? How am I going to curse her? Like,
well, I mean, she's already having to drink almond milk, so that's a curse.
That's a curse in and of itself. We don't have just curses that come out of and reversals that come out of history, right? So you can take some lessons and read some, and I'm sure Ash Miller wrote the Black Book of Isabel Gowdy. I'm sure there's going to be stuff in there too, if you really want to like look through things of that nature. But
well, just get creative.
You can get creative. One of the most important things to me, and everyone's going to have like, what is that hard line item that you have with you when you're doing reversal magic? And for me, it doesn't matter who or what I'm reversing. There is a mirror. I set all of my spell work on top of a mirror. I also have mirrors that point at my altar at all times. So mirrors are like a very heavy item that I just keep around, but especially when I'm doing reversals. Now, I also send back reversals with specific intention, and it depends on who I'm reversing, what I'm reversing, but I always send back the reversal to be more than what was sent to me. So they'll either feel that effect like twice or three times or five times or seven times. I try and keep it like in a number that makes sense to me and what's kind of going on. But if you're doing a reversal, you have to determine, are you going to reverse using yourself as this tie, the spiritual tie, if you would? Are you using yourself or are you using another spirit? Because for me personally, when I'm sending out reversal, even though I've been the target, I'm usually calling upon a secondary spirit or a deity or something else to transmit it back. And that's just like personal preference. So you get to determine, okay, well, if a reversal has been done to you, in what way are you going to address sending it back? And if you're calling on other spirits, there is more work that's going to be involved than you just sending it back on your own.
Well, and that kind of reminds me of growing up in the church, giving it up to God. Saying that I can't carry this anymore and I need God to carry this for me.
Let go and let God.
No, but really though, and there would be times, I know people are very sensitive because of the Greg Locke of it all right now, but there have been definitely times where people in a church have been like, you know, if you're feeling the effects of the demons on you, then you need to give it up to God. You need to let God deal with it and surrender it up to God. So that is originally where my indoctrination takes me, right, is to, but also gods in general are those allies. They are above us. And if we have that relationship, for instance, the Abrahamic God straight up says, no, give this to me and I will take it. It's part of the role of the deity. Give me your hardships. Give me your curses and your demons if you surrender this unto me. And there's some baggage that goes with that. But if you surrender this unto me, then I will handle it for you and you will no longer have to deal with it. So if you have a relationship with those spirits, go for it. I tend to be kind of ruthless and say, track down, follow the trail and track it down to its source and eat them. I don't care what you do to them. If they're sending something to me, bye, have fun, you know, and let the spirits have their way with it, you know, because then they get to do whatever they want. And it's not my problem anymore. So that's my version of let go and let God is, all right, follow that trail. Eat them up. I don't care.
Let go and let God, but make it witchcraft.
So I did want to share this little story of my own irony. I'm always one to preach, you know, don't just go by a book of correspondences. Do your own work. Make your own associations. Make your own relationships. That said, up until maybe like a couple years ago, I exclusively used agrimony for any kind of reversal work. And I could not in a million years tell you what agrimony looks like if it was not chopped up and sold to me in a dime bag. Because I read it in a Scott Cunningham book when I was 14 years old. And I just used it from then on out. And it seemed to have worked. So I did want to kind of share this only because, one, to show that, yes, I do believe that you should have a relationship with everything you're working with. But we all start somewhere, and that also doesn't mean it doesn't work. Does it work as well as some of the things I do today? I don't think so. But in a pinch, it was effective. And we all have our own systems, and we'll eventually develop things that work a little bit better. But yeah, for years, agrimony was like, I swore by it was the only thing I used. I don't know what it looks like. Even today, I have no fucking idea what that looks like. I don't even know what its scientific name is. I don't even know if what I was buying in the store.
Agrimony and spell work.
If I went to a store and they had three bags that were all labeled agrimony that looked vastly different, I'd be like, I have no fucking idea what to get. You know, which is bad because if I'm using it in reversal magic, that's something that you don't want to fuck up. You know, if you are doing a good luck spell and going to go get a scratchy lotto, you mess up. It's not that big of a deal. If you're trying to send something that is hurting you back to where it came from and you get the wrong thing because you don't have that relationship, just learn from my mistakes. Don't be in that position.
So I'm wondering, and I could be wrong, but so I've Googled agrimony. And so we'll talk about agrimony for a brief second, and then we'll kind of close. But for anyone else that has read, I guess, Scott Cunningham's Herbal, they would, you know, be probably seeing the same thing. And Scott Cunningham had done an interview at one point that talked about how he wrote that book. And now I'm going off memory here, and I could be misquoting, but Scott Cunningham did a mix of things to write that book. One, he looked at other plant, like Victorian plant references, because there was like a language of flowers that had been written. So he took his inspiration for the correspondences based off of that. And then he sat with some plants and channeled them, and that's what they told him they were for. And that's how he compiled this book, essentially. I mean, there's other ways that he did it, but on a baseline, that's like an interview that he gave. He was talking about the technique. So we have those, and we have like the basis in the other books that he's pulled from and kind of what they look like and why. So I've Googled agrimony, and it says that it's an herbal medicine that is used for the liver, kidneys, and stomach problems. So you're already dealing with like kind of grounding type stuff. But the liver in specific is interesting because I'm pretty sure that Saturn rules the liver. And Saturn is used in like baneful stuff. Now, I want to Google that because I think I'm right, but I could be wrong.
Well, even then, using bane to fight, I think Jupiter, you can, in
Jupiter
fact...
rules over the liver.
Okay. I was just, the only thing I was going to say is I do, in fact, think that you can fight fire with fire when it comes to cursing. You can make it a witch war if you want to. It depends on how angry you are.
Jupiter rules the liver, kidneys, and pancreas. So if Jupiter rules two of the three on agrimony, I would be curious why you would use Jupiter as that correspondence. Because, like, Jupiter is money. Do you really use Jupiter for baneful working?
I don't work with the planets at all. This is the one place where folk magicians do like planets. I don't work with planets almost at all. I really don't. So this is out of my wheelhouse. And again, like again, I don't use agrimony today. I just wanted it to kind of be that, like, don't be like me. Using a plant that I have no idea how to even identify.
Yeah. But I think it's good. Like, when I look at correspondences, I like to, especially ones that have been written in books, I like to Google how the author could have come to the conclusion of that correspondence and see if I can figure it out myself, or if that's just, like, been their personal experience with the plant. So maybe agrimony is one that Scott Cunningham sat in front of and was like, I feel like you'd be good at this.
And I mean, this will be kind of my takeaway for the day. It should say it in the book. Any source that you're reading, of course, you know, your Pliny the Elders are not going to be putting down sometimes they do, but they probably aren't exactly listing out all the ways that they have these kind of associations. But a modern author saying X herb does X thing should say, this is my experience. I asked the plant. I got it from Agrippa. I got it from this person. I got it from this grimoire. It should say it in there. It should be, that is a, in my opinion, I do believe that readers should do their own research, obviously, but it is also the responsibility of the author to state why. When I write in Southern Cunning that sulfur is one of the biggest things for clearing out bad spirits, the reason for it comes out of folklore, but is also because it smells bad, and spirits, we know, love things that smell good. They don't like offensive smells. So when authors are putting things into books, even if you're just writing a blog that you know people are going to do, be responsible. Say where it comes from. Tell us why.
I was recently, I'll end us on this, but I was recently doing a counter hex. By recently, I mean it was within the past 3 months. And so when I'm using the word counter hex, I'm specifically not using the word reversal because it was way more involved than that. But I was doing a counter hex and I went to a botanica and I got a jar of sulfur and the lady looked at it and looked at me and was like, do you know how to use this?
It's like, gag.
I you know what though? I get this when I tell you that this botanica hates me, but they love my money. They'll sell me whatever I want, but they are so shady every time I'm there. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's like the extremely pale skinned red hair combo or the fact that I am like child size, but one of the two, they're always just like, what the fuck is wrong with this bitch?
I don't go to the botanicas in my area because my practice is all about what can I find in the front yard nowadays. But back when I lived up towards Orlando, I loved my botanica. We had a very, very, we were on a first name basis. I went to a number of misas with them. It was, if you can cultivate, I know we should be saying like support your local occult shop, but let's be real. Most of our local occult shops are like, here's five different incense that are like mass produced that smell like ass. And here's 5 million crystals that were unethically sourced that I'm telling you are good for healing. You know, that's the unfortunate reality. Botanicas, in my experience, tend to be a better place to get things, especially if you're on a more folk or traditional path, because your local New Age shop is not going to be carrying dried toads. And you might be
neither
able to
is
find
my botanica.
Those.
Where are you going? Jesus.
In Orlando? Yeah, you can
find it. In Orlando. You know what? When I'm up there next, I'll stop into some. You got to send me the name to one. But no, the ones down here, there's just the reason why I end up at Botanica's over. So I work in a New Age store. They sell like New Age and crystals and books and stuff. We have like 5,000 books on the shelves. And so we like, if you need an occult book in the Florida region, we have it. But
sure,
we are a little weaker on some of those, you know, Botanica staple items. Like, we don't have a whole ton of jar candles. We don't have a whole ton of various herbs or statues even. So, you know, you just have to know, like, what you're looking for and then identify the people that would be able to supply you with that thing.
The Botanicas I used to go to in Orlando had, like, I could get turtle shells, I could get toads, I get a lot of good stuff for folk magic that other shops just don't have. So, and you also get to learn about other people's practices, not from an appropriation standpoint, just getting to know other people. You don't have to take everything, everyone. And just forge relationships and support local businesses. What a wholesome takeaway on the episode about reversal magic. Support local business.
So if you enjoy Folkcraft, you can find us in places. Aaron, where can the people find you?
I'm on the gram, AaronOberon. I am also Aaron. That's at Aaron Oberon. You can also find me at Book Places and buy my book, Southern Cunning. It's pretty good. I like it.
Temperance. I'm at Well Woman Witchcraft on Instagram. I'm at Temperance Alden on Twitter. My book Year of the Witch is available everywhere. My planner Year of the Witch is available on Amazon. My birthday is on April 11th, and this episode will come out April 12th. And I'm only going to short release this episode because I'm saying my birthday is on April 11th. So if you listen to this episode, wish me happy birthday.
Happy birthday!
Thank you. Big Aries energy. So that's Folkcraft. And you know what? I think that this is the month where we finally make a Patreon. We've been talking about it. We didn't do it. I think this is the month we do it. So keep your eyes open for that.
I'm putting it in the world. I'm manifesting it. I'm making it real.